Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights you need to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Salvatore Manzi. Salvatore is a leadership communications coach with over 20 years of experience helping inclusive changemakers amplify their influence and impact. With emphasis on frameworks, principles, and techniques, Salvatore empowers thought leaders to connect authentically and navigate high-stakes engagements with confidence. His approach sits at the intersection of leadership, communication, and collaboration, helping teams turn complexity into clarity and build cultures where messages don't just inform, but inspire action. Together, they'll unpack what it means to lead through communication, especially in moments where clarity and trust matter most. In this conversation, you'll hear how simple frameworks can transform complicated ideas into messages people can actually remember and act on. You'll learn why presence, the way you show up in your tone, body, and mindset, shapes how others receive you. And you'll see how dialogue, not download, helps teams build connection, curiosity, and shared meaning across every level of the organization. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, and today I'm joined by Salvatore Manzi. Salvatore is a leadership communications coach and also the author of a book that's soon to release, Clear and Compelling. So we're going to dive into both of those fields of work today. Welcome to the show, Salvatore.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
I'm excited from what we were covering pre-show, just kind of energy levels and the impact that you get to create with teams. Maybe you can kind of bring us all up to speed on how you came to be doing this work.
Oh, thank you. My work sits at the intersection between leadership, communication, and collaboration. I work with leaders and their teams to use communication strategies and hopefully create a more inclusive, high-performing culture. Mm-hmm. So what that translates to is I will coach leaders one-on-one for big stage presentations. Maybe it's the all hand. I have coached people speaking in front of the United Nations and one presidential candidate. Yeah. Once I work with a leader, I work with a team. And we work on a team. We create shared language, shared tools for framing our content, being able to share and create connections with each other. Mm-hmm. And from those two things, we began working to create a more continuous workflow and a more collaborative environment.
Oh, I really like that. How did you get into that work?
Yeah, it's a combination of my mom and my dad. So my dad spoke at conferences when I was young, and he would come home and he'd be so lit up. I'm like, what is this? I want to do this, whatever it is. And my mom facilitated events. Like, she put on events and facilitated events. So the combination between watching the two of them work all the time, when I got to college, I was like, I'm going to get up on that stage. And as soon as I did, my voice started pitching. My voice left my body. And I was standing on the stage with no voice. And I walked off the stage, humbled, but curious. What is it that caused my body to betray me like that? And so I'm more analytical. I'm kind of more introverted. And I realized most public speaking training is geared towards the extrovert. I needed to find out what works in terms of communication for the introverted, analytical. So I spent the last 20 years diving into the neuroscience, this organizational behavior, the psychology around how we communicate and how we relate. And I've been sharing those tools, frameworks, and such with my clients ever since.
That's brilliant. I've heard so much about communication from the standpoint of like, who's your audience? You know, how do they take in information, but less so about who you are and how you best project your story. So that is fascinating.
I like that frame. Yeah.
That's cool.
It really does make a difference. If I'm a naturally introverted person avoiding the spotlight, or I naturally hold the pause because I'm thinking, versus the extrovert that's going to carry along the path of their thinking.
Yeah.
I need to develop tools to appear like in a format that is more relatable to my audience. And if I'm technology, data-driven, financial-driven, or all about the tools and like what's working, I need to be able to communicate that complexity to the sales team and the right? And they don't speak the same language. So I have to learn the frameworks to communicate my brilliance to the other sides of the workforce.
Yeah. Complexity is a great word, Salvatore. I see this in any business. You know, if you think about any business, the leaders of a business are often dealing with a lot more complexity. And it's not just the functions of the organization or the different customers, but it might be the banking relationships, the economic outlook, the partnerships. There's so many pieces. And yet that's not all very relevant to certain team members based on the tasks that they've given to do their work on. So there's a complexity kind of gap or bridge to I guess travel over.
I like where this conversation is going, and my analytical brain is like, yes, the difference between complicated and complex. There are two different things.
Let's
right?
go there.
Complicated means it's a series of steps, like a watch is a complicated thing, but you put it together in a very particular form and you get there. Complex means that there are just an unknown number of variables interacting in a dynamic environment that could send out any other different outputs. And so everybody's work area is going to have a little bit of both complexity and complication, right?
Yeah.
And where do I communicate the complicated aspect of it? Get too far into the how so I lose my audience?
Yeah.
Where do I get too far into the complexity so I get too far into the variables and I lose my audience? Frameworks help me bring it together so that I can communicate my ideas and effectively make them actionable.
Oh, that's neat. It reminds me of a story. I once had a salesperson that I had the pleasure of working with, and she would always say, "Hey, I'm selling toast. Stop telling me how the toaster works." I thought it was brilliant.
That is great. Yeah, I often say, you know, metaphors move minds.
Yeah.
If you really want to make your insights, your brilliance, your data land and connect with your listeners, you need a metaphor. Use a metaphor to bring it together. I had a client who worked in technology and healthcare, and she was never getting heard. Her ideas were not getting heard at the table until she started using the analogy of her Prius. Like, you're trying to put gas in my Prius, and people are like, "Oh, I get it." And then her complicated information was understandable by her listeners.
That's super cool. So are the frameworks really what's driven not just your coaching business, but the evolution of the book? Like, do you want to kind of dive in there in terms of, you know, who the book's for, what people are going to find there?
Absolutely.
Sure.
So first of all, I break down communication into three pillars: content, delivery, presence. So whenever I work with somebody, we're going to work in one of those three pillars. Content: what is the framework you're using to communicate your ideas to somebody else? Research shows if you deliver it in a certain way, they're going to be able to understand it, process it, and remember it faster. So frameworks work. Delivery is how you communicate your message. You bring it to life. You bring meaning to the content itself. And if there's incongruency between the way you're communicating and what you're communicating, people smell it. It's a weird sort of like something doesn't feel right and they're not able to process. So those are the two main ones. Presence, the third pillar, is about the way you're showing up.
Yeah.
What are the set of beliefs, the resourcefulness, your agility in that moment? And what was it that got you to where you are that isn't going to help you get ahead so that you can project the leadership presence that you want? So my book breaks down those three pillars, and it includes all the communication strategies that I've been using for the last 20 years. Primarily my wheelhouse, because I started doing this in the Bay Area with tech and engineers and that. So I've been working with data-driven, analytical, STEM scientists, researchers, and so kind of introverted at some times, and how to turn that data into sales and human resources and marketing and all of those departments.
Oh, that's neat. It reminds me of the joke, which I'll probably butcher, which was, what's the difference between the introverted accountant and the introverted engineer? Have you heard that one?
No, and I'm dying to hear it.
He's like, the introverted accountant looks at your shoes, the introverted engineer looks at their own shoes.
Wait a minute. Oh, okay, I get it.
When they're having a conversation, it's just like, that's the focus.
That's good. Thank you.
So it is interesting, though, that I love the way that you framed, and obviously that's a mass generalization, but you framed like what got you there won't get you to where you're going. So it sounds like you're working with leaders to say, here's where your current strengths are. This is what the organization or the project or the team or the investors need of you for what's next.
Here, I'll just lay it out right now. If you are listening to this and you realize that you now have an idea that needs to be taken to the next level, or you just got promoted into a role where you have to lead a meeting or present, or you're ready to take your idea to the venture capital market and start pitching and getting funders, this book is for you. It's going to help you translate all that brilliance into ways that can connect with those people.
Very neat. Very neat. So maybe starting with content, so content delivery presence. And content, you said, frameworks help people better relate to, understand the material. What's an example of a framework that helps in shaping content?
You, then me. You, then me is the number one communication principle in my world, and I teach that to everyone. You, then me. Every time I open my mouth, my goal is to speak to you, your experience, what you just said, acknowledge or validate or share what I understand your world to be.
Yes.
Before I get to my agenda, my response, whatever it is, that creates rapport. That creates an engagement where we can start working together. Too oftentimes, people in the tech world or people that are analytically minded, if they're talking to another tech analyst's mind, we can just go zeros and ones, zeros and ones, zeros and ones. There's no disconnect. People outside of the tech world, a little more touchy-feely, they need acknowledgement. There needs to be a little bit of like understanding before you tell them that what they want to do is absolutely wrong, right?
Interesting. Okay. So a way to model that is if you're an engineer talking to the marketing department and they're trying to tell a big story about the new feature you've just built. Where do you start there?
If I was an engineer talking to the marketing department and they want to tell the story about the feature that I just ran, I would say something like, as marketers, you are hoping to convey the complexity of this program simply to our customer base so that they can use it. You're hoping that it's going to be very simple to explain to them, and you're going to hope that you can make it sound like it's going to solve all of their problems. Now, I know that in the past, we've had some that were not a good rollout. There were some pushbacks, there were some chunks, and I know that there has been some disconnects at times between what marketing is saying and what we actually do provide. Yeah. But I hope that and by the end of this presentation or by the end of this conversation, you're going to get a better sense of what becomes possible with this tool when you are conveying it out to your customers, our customer base.
Oh, interesting. There's two things I really liked about that. One, you continued to intentionally, as my guest, use the word hope.
Hope and fear are the two biggest drivers. And whenever I'm communicating, doing the you than me, there wants to be, and I'm going deep dive on this. I hope That's people good. Can follow me. But when I'm introducing a comment, my hope is to take you on a bit of a journey. So there wants to be a bit of like what you're hoping for and what you might be worried about. Yeah. But here's what we're going to do, or what you might be worried about. But here's what we can do. So you want to take them on a little bit of a journey.
Bit of both.
Because people are emotionally beings, not just intellectual beings. So you want to get a little bit of the hope and fear in there.
Oh, I like that. I like that it opens up the realm of possibility then too. It takes away from the exactness, which is often a problem in teams, particularly around psychological safety.
Say more about what you mean there, the exactness.
So I've found in my different cross-functional discussions that, let's say, the CFO or a chief technology officer can come in and be like, bang, here it is, and this is what it needs to look like, and bang, 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 bang. And you just sit there and you're being told, and you don't really feel comfortable to question the why or the what if this, or I'm concerned that my customer is going to be here. Whereas if you come in the way that you did it as the CFO or the CTO and say, hey guys, I'm hoping that we can achieve this. I appreciate that you've got customers to handle. It invites a little bit more like question, critique, curiosity, which I think is powerful.
Yes, I get with the exactness. I work with a chief compliance officer and it's black and white. Compliance is black and white. If I go into the meeting as a compliance officer, I'm not giving you some gray area. I'm giving you yes and no's, right? Yeah. But that person receiving doesn't want exactness. People don't really, like, adults don't like to be told what to do. It feels micromanaging. So there, if there's a moment of you then me of acknowledging the humanness in the situation, maybe even a self-acknowledgement, you know, like, hey, when I was doing your role, I was doing this. And I realized later that what has to happen is this. So going forward. Now, of course, I'm going to say it just out front. If this is the third time you're having the conversation with the person, there is a time to draw the line. But if I can start with a you then me with that person, they're going to receive that compliance black and white in a way that feels more like, okay, yeah, I'm still a human and I can do this.
Yeah, I really like that. And then there's this journey concept, the fact that you're going to actually walk them through, in this example with the engineer and the marketer, walk them through what it is and let them come up with some of their own impressions rather than just tell. I think that's fascinating.
The mind is a meaning-making machine, not a precision recording device.
Yeah.
You have all that data. You have all the data points, all the history. You've got the research. You've got everything, and you could dump that on a person, but it's not going to convince them.
No,
it's not. There needs to be an establishment of meaning. There needs to be a connection before they can actually start processing. The more complicated the information, the more the mind is going to look for meaning to what you're talking about. So if you can tell me, hey, this isn't just a blueprint, this is your future home. And in this home, I want you to see the trees and I want you to see the sunset behind it. Like, paint the picture, create the meaning behind the data. Then you can layer on the data and they can start creating understanding from all of it.
That's brilliant. So that's really where that art comes in as well. I know pre-show we were talking about facilitation being an art, but clearly here a presentation of a meeting when you're trying to convey something that's new to a team member and get them to come along, it needs that story and a bit of human emotion and energy to go with it.
Yeah. Dialogue, not download. That's another one of my favorites.
Because
easy for me to just download everything I know about it, especially if you're in a Q&A. Let's imagine anybody listening, imagine you just finished presenting a brilliant idea and then you start taking questions and you get that pushback and challenge, right?
Yeah.
It's easy just to go into, but here are the da-da-da-da-da. People want a dialogue. They don't want a download of information.
Yeah.
They're not worried as much about you giving them the right answer as they are about you maintaining rapport in the relationship. Mm.
That's really interesting. And that's the second time rapport's come up. So tell me a little bit more about the science or the practice of rapport and why that's important for leaders and teams.
I really appreciate the question because I don't know that I've had that one before. And I'm checking my inner consciousness. Can I speak as an expert on rapport? Like, I don't know. I guess we all are somewhat expert on how to develop rapport for other people. But
yeah.
Bottom line is people have filters that stop them from hearing what you're saying.
Right.
Right. Initially, there's all the distraction in their world that's keeping them from focusing on it. Once you get past that and get their attention, there's all of their own beliefs and thoughts and confusion about whatever it is you're talking to. If you want to get past all of that, it's important to build rapport. The only way to do that is to create a relatability, to establish that trust, to let them know that, hey, I understand and appreciate where you're coming from. And here's what I understand your perspective to be. Correct me if I'm wrong. In fact, I want to be wrong so that you can correct me.
Yes.
And help me in the right thing. I will say this. People do not like being told that they are angry or upset.
I've worked that out with my wife, and yet I still fall into that trap.
Yeah, never label those two on anybody. You can say, you know, if I were in your situation, I might be frustrated. That's as close as you can get to those two feelings.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you can say, well, I can tell that there's a little bit of confusion here for you. Let me help you. Let me see if I can clear it up.
Yeah.
That one is not offensive as much anyway.
Well, it depends who you're talking to, because there are certain very bright-minded people out there that if I say I can sense there's confusion for you, they're going to be like, who are you to tell me I'm confused?
Don't tell me what I am. Like, you don't know me.
That's right. That's neat. That's really cool. Now, building rapport with one individual in a conversation is very different from building rapport with 100 employees in a town hall. So I would imagine that the you then me framework is helpful, but are there any other things that you lean on when you've got that larger format audience to engage?
The you then me principle becomes all y'all principle.
Okay.
That's my, I grew up in Kansas. We say all y'all, and I know that your partner is also from Texas. So there's probably a little all y'all happening.
There's a lot of all y'all back there.
Yes. Yeah. So the idea being that you then me is still relevant. It's just you're speaking to the group. And so we have to use slightly mitigating language. Some of you are probably wondering about, and I imagine many of you are hoping for, and you are right if you are one of those who are concerned about. And I imagine a few of you even are thinking, like, however you want to do it, but you can still use the you as an all y'all and bring in the entire group to build that rapport before you drop your agenda or whatever is on the town hall meeting for that day.
Yeah, got it. Got it. I like that. So let's say you've built that rapport. People are listening. They know you care. Where does it, you know, so many people just try and stack meetings now. Where does it fit for you in terms of like, how much is too much, and what's the right balance of content in a delivery?
I appreciate this question because you're giving me an opportunity to talk about one of my favorite things. The brain loves novelty, period. The brain loves novelty. Our brains need something new every 3 to 5 minutes. You're not introducing some adjustment to the flow of information every 3 to 5 minutes, you are losing your audience, period.
Interesting.
That could be as simple as bringing up a prop. That could be as simple as changing your voice. That can be as simple as changing your body posture somewhat. The more dramatic the change, the more you're going to pique attention again.
Fascinating.
Right? But every 3 to 5 minutes, if you look at TED Talks, right, they have beats. Every 5 minutes, there's a beat. If you look at TV shows, especially comedy, every like 2.5 minutes, there's a beat to change and shift the energy and re-engage the audience. It's an attention game. And unfortunately, some of the algorithms have really figured it out and keep us sort of addicted to our social media.
So if you've got a lot of content to deliver, or whether it's a lot of content on one topic or multiple topics, the key is that you're bringing that variety to bear. Interesting. Yeah.
A lot of people underestimate the value of moving on the stage or even around the room. You don't have to stand at the front of the room and speak. You can move around the room, like move intentionally. I think this is where it becomes an art form. Many of us, I'm Italian. I grew up using my hands. Like I can't communicate with others. I had to learn to use gestures intentionally so that they weren't just a form of monotone. People stop watching my body because they can't, my body is not providing emphasis or meaning to anything I'm saying because it's just a blur. Your body is an instrument. We're getting into the second pillar, right? Your body is an instrument, and if you want to bring an emphasis to a point in what you're saying, there needs to be an intentional gesture. There needs to be a lean forward to the camera. You're online. There needs to be a shift in tone or tonality to emphasize what you're saying. You have all these tools, but if we're using them unconsciously, we're missing the mark.
Yeah, I can totally see that. It actually reminds me of a TED Talk, Vanessa Van Edwards' TED Talk I watched recently. It's a great one.
And so good. Watch it, everyone.
It is. It's brilliant. We'll add it to the show notes. But she was talking about the importance of those hand gestures and movements and even like smiling and how real your smile is and how that becomes contagious to people. So there were just all of these amazing cues. And the one that I really liked is when she did the example of talking about something really big and there was a very clear difference in what her gesture was and what she was talking about. And so she was just like, people pick up on all of that stuff.
And it becomes an unconscious, like something's off. And so all of a sudden, my unfettered attention to what you're saying becomes a little bit mixed in like concern. Like, why does something feel off? I'm not quite sure what it is. And I would add, there's an added layer when we're virtual, because now we have this postage stamp. And we still need to communicate with our entire body inside this little...
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So even though they can't see it all, it's important.
They need to see your hands. Bring your hands into the screen. There is a physiological response when you see someone's hand. You viscerally calm down. Because on some part of your unconscious brain says they don't have anything that can harm them or me.
Yes.
So it's a little safer now.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah.
And if you're talking to your boss, like your hand with a pen and your thing, that shows undivided attention. I'm not multitasking.
Yeah.
I'm listening to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a client, right? I'm listening to what you're saying.
Yeah. I like that. And the importance of the pen versus just the fist on the hand.
I like using the pen because that way they know if I do anything with my hands, I'm probably taking notes. It plants
very
the
cool. There's a subconscious like there too.
Yeah.
So we're getting into the delivery with some of those pieces. What else do you direct leaders towards?
In terms of their delivery?
Yes.
That body, eyes, and voice, right? How are you using your body? And that means how is your posture? How is your movement? And gestures. How are you using your voice? Like there's your pitch, there's your cadence, there is your volume. Volume doesn't read over the internet as much, but a lot of people underestimate the value of a pause.
Yeah.
Right? Outside of those three, I would say with the eyes, and I think this is something that's been covered a lot, but people underestimate the value of looking into the camera when you are online.
Yeah.
Because that's where you connect with your audience, not when you're looking at the screen at the thing. So looking into the camera, I have what's called a 10-second rule. Plain and easy. Whenever you start talking in a virtual platform, the first 10 seconds into the camera.
Brilliant.
Because your box lights up, everybody on the call is looking for you on the screen. They find you. And within that first 10 seconds, they've made eye contact with you. If you just train yourself, first 10 seconds, anytime you start talking, you look into the camera, then you can look at the screen. They have at least one moment of a bonding with you.
Yes. That's interesting. I met a friend who was doing some work on a remote site, and he took the CEO out on the remote site, and they were meeting some workers. And the CEO didn't turn up in a suit. They turned up in overalls because it's a remote site. And one of the employees who'd been on hundreds of town halls with the CEO got introduced to the CEO and like, here's so-and-so. And he's like, whatever, who are you really? But that goes to show you that, like, if you're not making that engagement with your team, even though you're the CEO, people might not know who you are when you turn up.
That's a really good point. What is your brand? Like, how are people remembering you? Because this might be the only image and people get of you forever.
Yeah.
And when they do finally meet you, is it going to match? Did they actually lock eyes and connect with you? Or are they more intrigued by that fascinating picture in your background, right?
Or the screen, the PowerPoint slide that's taking 75% of the screen that you're sharing.
Right. There's that too.
Yeah. That's neat. On delivery, Dan Pink talks a lot about the power of three, like hitting a keynote three times. Do you have a view on that being an important element of a leader getting a message out?
I would agree to this. There's two aspects to what you're saying. I would put it in the content bucket. Because we want three buckets of information. I don't care how many data points you have to share, put them in three buckets. Because that's how the brain can naturally organize. It's simply what's first, what's last, and what's in the middle. Law of primacy, what's the first thing you said? Law of recency, what's the last thing you said? And law of consistency, what's the thing you said most often?
Got it.
We're easily going to remember the first and last, and if you give me one other, I can remember that too. Go to four, I lost them. I probably lost all of them.
Yeah.
So there is the rule of threes in terms of three bucket points. But what I also heard you say is saying it three times.
Yeah.
There is in everybody's presentation a main point. If you're not making that point clear, you're leaving it up to them to decide what your story means, right? Mm. And I could give you examples. I won't go too deep on this, but if I told you a story and then ask you, what did it mean? You're going to come up with a different meaning. Everybody in the room is going to have a different meaning. So you want to say your point, and yes, you want to say your point three times in your talk so that people actually hear it and it starts to resonate.
Yeah.
Ideally, it's close to the beginning and close to the end, law of recency, law of primacy, and that way it resonates with them.
Brilliant. Oh, I like that a lot. Neat. So we've come from content into delivery, and then you get to presence.
The big one.
Yeah. And executive presence is thrown around a little bit willy-nilly. Is it the same thing? Is it different? Like, how do you approach presence?
Presence to me is where comfort meets authenticity.
Mm.
Where are you able to truly be yourself and feel comfortable doing that in front of whatever the context is you are? All communication is contextual. Who are you talking to? What are you talking about? What's the environment in which you are talking? So there is no hard and fast rule, right? Yeah. I might feel safe one-on-one talking about this topic. Get me in front of that person or in front of 10 people. All of a sudden, I'm not. And we have to look at what are the triggers? What are the things that are causing me to feel a little bit like less comfortable? Mm. What's the story connected to that? Does that story still work for you? I'll give you a very simple framework to think of, and that is the continuum from agency to relational.
Mm-hmm.
High agency is approaching the room from the sovereign. I am in charge. I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to fear. This is my domain. I am the expert. The kindergartner teacher on the relational side is there about making space. Like, how can I make you feel comfortable? And what was that like for you? And tell me more. Yeah. Right. And you can see where you are on the continuum by your behaviors. So this is something I work with one-on-one with coaching my clients, is bringing awareness to the unconscious behaviors that show up in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I might find myself shrinking in. I'm like, okay, why am I suddenly being more relational in that point?
Yeah.
I might find myself being more like puffed up and like this. So like, okay, what's going on with the agency? Like, it almost feels forced, like you're trying to appear. Like, what's the story that's driving? And once you become aware of what is driving that initial impulsive reactive behavior, then you can start choosing the behavior that's going to be most appropriate for that situation, and in that way, exuding presence.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah, I've definitely seen some of those triggered impulses show up. And one of the worst places for it to show up after you've delivered a perfect presentation to the team is in Q&A when they hit you with a curveball. So that one's a tricky one.
Yeah. I do have a framework for the Q&A, and I'd love to say that I bat 100. I don't. When I remember to use the framework, it's really good because it does handle. To me, Q&A is the peak of engagement. I love it.
Yes.
Let's just get to the Q&A, man. I love that part.
Yeah.
And those curveballs come, like learning how to dance, how to maintain rapport with the listeners and that one particular questioner is an art. And if I can do it, then everything flows easily from there.
That's neat. So when you've worked with leaders like this and you're building this structure, so they're really knocking down their content, their delivery, their presence, they're using the right frameworks and methods, they're really engaging their people. How does that translate to like team performance? Is it clarity? Is it psychological safety? How does it tend to show up?
Every way. It elevates everything, because when people can understand your vision, they can get on board. When people can trust your position, even if you don't have all the answers, they can get behind you. When people can believe in your vision, they will follow you. So it is the essential tool. Communication is the essential tool to creating psychological safety and collaboration.
So do you, with that in mind, then it's a high leverage activity. And I know there's a lot of language out there right now that the soft skills are in fact the hard skills. You know, why aren't we teaching more of this to early stage leaders in businesses, to kids in college? Like this all seems very accessible. I'm glad you've written a book on it, but like, why isn't it out there more?
Gosh, I would love to unpack this a lot. Like, I have theories about why it's not out there more. I know that it is. I mean, it is everybody. It's the number one thing employees ask for is professional development, especially around the soft skills. It's the number one thing on all the surveys. And so why aren't companies providing it? It's that ROI is not measurable. you know, a company that is in the 50 and 60,000 employee base can't measure exactly or effectively what was the impact of that 20,000 we invested on a communication training program for employees, right? Like, it's hard to measure those soft skill improvements. So I think companies are weary about making that investment. It takes a strong leader who recognizes the value or sees the gap that needs to be filled, whether it's with themselves or with their team, that brings in that resource 9 times out of 10.
Oh, I like the gap. So if you're a leader out there and you've got a team and just things are feeling funky, maybe it's in your team or it's across departments, say it's a finance and sales or sales and engineering or however it works. How might you coach a leader on capturing the communication skills as the gap to get the team to, you know, coalesce around?
Well, there's a couple of things. I'd want to start by asking, like, where do you notice the gap? Like, how is that gap showing up? Where is the, maybe it's a cross-functional falling apart that's happening. Like, what are you noticing is the gap that needs to be, like, addressed? As far as creating and filling that gap, it's like there wants to be a shared language. There wants to be a shared understanding of how to communicate. Oftentimes, it's just like they're using GChat and I'm using Slack, and there was a drop ball between kind of a thing. So maybe it's
very tactical,
right? But more often than not, it's we don't have the same language. When they say all inclusive, to me, that means this, and to them, it means this, and we don't have a shared language about that. So it's a matter of, like, let's learn how to communicate and let's come to agreement about certain terms. But more importantly, when I'm communicating with somebody, am I communicating in a way that is creating rapport, or is it communicating in that exact science of this is compliance, left, right, go?
Yeah, that's interesting. There was something you said at the top of the organization about coming into work with the leader and then cascading down into the team. And you said it was about creating a shared language and ultimately connection, which you've just touched on again. So here's an example. Let's say I've got a team and there's 4 leaders across this team, and they've all got their own departments. And all of a sudden I sense that when we have meetings, everyone's just telling, talking, whatever it is, and there's not a lot of curiosity in there. Is there a shared language or a framework that you can use that brings a bit of hygiene to that environment that kind of allows a leader or one of the team members to say, hey guys, we're here and I think we really want to be there? Or how does that play out?
I love the question, and this is so real. I've actually seen this play out, and it's different for each group. Like, one group that I worked with, it was a distrust between the team members, that they weren't trusting either to follow through or lots of things. Oftentimes I'll start with, like, say the thing that you are afraid to say.
Oh, I like that one.
Tell me what it is that you're holding back from saying to this group. You got to start with the CEO, demonstrate what it's about.
Yeah.
Let everybody see that you can share. And so a little bit of your, like, vulnerable side without this meaning it's the end of the rope for you, the end of your line.
Yeah.
And there are ways to share those frustrations and pain points, friction points, in a way that doesn't put the blame on somebody else. Nonviolent communication is a real easy tool. It's often used in interpersonal relationships and more intimate, but it can be used in a professional sense as well. In the sense of, when I saw you do this, my reaction or my sense was this, and what I would prefer is this.
Yes.
Simple.
Yeah.
Hard to think about, because, and I'll just break it down, the hardest part of this is separating data from judgments and opinions.
Yes.
So if I can start with the data, not with my judgment or opinion, I have an effective line forward. So when I saw you do data point, data point, data point, my reaction or my thought or my belief, or I made up the story that, and what I would prefer going forward is this.
Oh, I like that.
The underlying principle of all of this is assume positive intent and coach to potential. It doesn't help if I'm coming from a reactive place or I see myself as a victim or I think that you were malintended. I want to go all the way to curiosity and assume that this person had no intent. I actually worked with this one person who had a horrible, she was getting, well, obliterated in all the 360s. Nobody liked her communication style, all this stuff. And it all came down to, like, she was not assuming positive intent.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that she was accusing them of being dumb. In her mind, she was. But it was that she, her tone of voice communicated an intense impatience with having to deal with this insanity.
Yeah.
So I, like, the tool that we started working with is, like, picture them as your six-year-old. She had a six-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
Picture them as your six-year-old. Would you? What would you say if your six-year-old came to you with that question? And it switched within like a week. She started approaching people with a, oh, okay, you than me. I would understand you. You're asking that question because of this. Okay, and you might be asking it because of this. And I get that you would ask that. And when you ask that, it. The reaction from me and what I make up is you don't get anything I'm saying. So what I would prefer going forward when we had a physical, and it was smoothed out.
Yeah.
It was a quick pivot of using nonviolent communication and this like imagination of a six-year-old instead of to spark curiosity. Everybody's going to have a different tool, but assume positive intent is the underlying basis of all of that.
And that's actually worked. I actually had some challenges with my teenage son. And as parents do, you know, you'll make an assumption of why they're asking something or making a statement or showing a face, and you get triggered and right? And so, sure enough, my therapist was like, picture him as a toddler. Because as his toddler self, number one, he's cute and he really needs your help. Actually, he's still cute and he really needs your help, but he just, you know, he caught you on a bad time. So it's very cool.
And there's a lot to be said about parents or managers who at the end of the rope, the end of the day, they've already had 14 calls. They've been called out and they've been, and then you come to them with this, like, it's hard. It's really hard. And that is what presence is about. Yeah. Are you able to bring up the presence and respond to the moment rather than react from an impulsive state or impulsive experience so that you can show up as the leader that you are?
Yeah, that's very neat. Final question. This has been wonderful. It's been great to get the tools of all of your years of work, but also to see how it shapes into teams. Are there any diagnostics out there that let you kind of sense check how is communication in this organization? Like we see engagement surveys all the time, but they're just grabbing at all sorts of stuff and throwing in a bucket and barely ever get listened to or used. But is there anything that you've seen out there that helps leaders kind of assess across their team what their communication capacity is?
I appreciate the question, and I'm not going to throw my weight into any one particular tool. But what I will say, my experience is the 360 is the only clear and true way of getting a clear picture of what's going on. Because to your point, throw a survey out there, you get a 20% survey response, and it's going to be the people that are motivated to respond typically.
Yeah.
Give them some sort of a personality test and you've got a tool for working on, but you're not going to get to the bottom of the communication, but you might be able to point to it. But if you have somebody dedicated to doing a 360 about key stakeholders, you can form a picture of what's going on in that team.
Yeah.
And then you can begin working on your milestones to how you, where you want to go.
No, that's great advice, Salvatore. I really appreciate that. And I also really appreciate the way that you've modeled so much of your work in today's, you know, engagement, you know, eyes, tone, hands. It's super cool. So for anyone who's been listening to this show, dive in and watch it on YouTube too, because there's a lot of masterclass in action here.
Wow. Thank you for that.
You bet. Lots that we covered today from, you know, the content delivery presence approach. Obviously I like the way that you focus on the leader and where the leader is trying to go and who they are as they approach communication and this team framework too. The book sounds like it's a great read. So we'll encourage people to go and find both you and the book. Where will they do that?
Easiest way is clearandcompellingplaybook.com. clearandcompellingplaybook.com. That is the link to get the pre-order, and it will be out in October.
Awesome. I look forward to diving in.
And if you're somebody out there who's ever left a meeting saying, oh, I wish I had said, I want to talk to you. send me a message in LinkedIn or some other way. I'd love to explore that communication with you.
That's awesome. Super powerful. Well, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,